This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This woman is your lawful wedded wife.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring, I thee wed.
Hello, Place to Be Nation, and welcome to the debut episode of With This Ring. I am your co-host, Ryan Everett, the two-time Place to Be Nation trivia champion. And though it might be shocking for someone who self-identifies as a wrestling trivia champion, I am here alongside my wife, Cindy.
Hi, my name is Cindy Everett, and I am married to the two-time Place to Be trivia champion.
It might be more, actually.
Oh,
they
really?
Just announced they're starting a new trivia tournament, but we'll get to that later. So before we do get into the actual introductions of what we're going to do, first, just let's talk about both of our wrestling fandoms a little bit.
Well, mine's a lot briefer than
yours. So in 1990, as a four-year-old, I was switching around the TV channels and came upon Rick the Macho Martel spraying the arrogance in Jake the Snake Roberts'
eyes. You remember the first match you saw?
I've looked at it since then. I didn't know. Like, before I looked it up, I wouldn't have known it.
Okay.
But it was just, because back then it was just all jobber squash matches, so nothing really memorable. It was the in-between things that would catch someone's eye. So really, yeah, 1990 to 2019, there have been a few lulls, but I never was out completely. I mean, like, during high school and stuff, I wouldn't watch it regularly, but I'd read what happened and... You know, it was always Mondays and Thursdays, so it's not like it was a going out night during the school year or anything.
Right.
So, and then, turning it over to you.
Okay, my wrestling fandom?
Yes.
So I do have two younger brothers, so I was, and they watched it, you know, every once in a great while. So I feel like in the 90s, like I obviously knew who Steve Austin was. I knew of him. I knew
right.
of China, but I can't say I ever really watched a match. Ever.
Okay.
We started dating in 2010, and you know, I do not remember the first match I watched with you, I have to say.
Yeah. I have a feeling it might have been Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania.
Was it the kid in the yellow raincoat?
Yes. The kid in the yellow raincoat. Because also
our friends like that one a lot too.
Yeah, and I think that's when I started talking you into going as Randy Savage and Elizabeth for Halloween.
Our
that
first
year.
Halloween, yeah.
Our first Halloween together,
yep.
Yes.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So in 2009, if someone came up to you outside your work in downtown Chicago and offered you $100 for every wrestler you could name, would you have walked out of there with $1,000?
No. No. Today, yes.
Yes. Today, I'd hope you'd get enough to remodel a bathroom or something.
Oh, yeah.
Around here.
Well, I don't think this is a very realistic scenario.
Who's
going to put this on?
I want to see who this guy is. call me over. Okay, so what we're going to plan on doing is, as of right now, as I told you about, the Place to Be Nation is doing their third annual Greatest WWE Ever project. The first was Greatest Singles Wrestler, and that was won by Randy Savage.
Oh.
Last year was...
How many times did you vote in that one?
Just once. I didn't do the Honorable Chicago thing.
Okay,
I
yeah.
voted once, and then... Last year was Greatest Tag Team Ever, and that was won by the Hardy Boys.
Okay.
Who we actually see
later
in our project tonight. And then the third is what they're doing now is the Greatest TV Pay-Per-View Match.
Okay.
So people have been nominating any match as long as it was on some sort of TV. So that covers Raw, SmackDown, Pay-Per-View, NXT, and then, like, even going further back in the 70s and 80s, in local markets, like
okay.
in New York,
yeah,
they'd have a cable channel, MSG, Boston had their own cable network, and they would put on the monthly shows.
And are those all on the network? Is that how you're accessing
them? Some of them are on the network. Oh, jeez. Some of them have been procured by other means, which we'll just leave it at that for right
Fair
now
enough.
To
okay.
protect certain people. But yeah, so they've all, and all the matches have been nominated. Some of them are just nominated because of everyone knows it.
Right.
So, like, for instance, the Randy Savage Ultimate Warrior match.
Right.
Everyone who's voting this has probably seen that.
Was the Kid in the Yellow Raincoat a part of the first contest?
He got some votes, but I don't think he made the final ballot. He was not. That might be next year, the greatest fan.
Oh, yeah.
Vote. But, so, there's matches like that which everyone who's going to vote have seen.
Like,
but then, match. I think the kind of, one of the fun things about this is seeing matches that you only saw one. Like, I saw it on Raw back in 1995.
Right.
Never saw it again. Or that I never saw. Like, a lot of the earlier.
You never, there's matches you've never
yes,
seen?
Yes, there are matches I've never
I
seen.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, I didn't watch a lot of Philadelphia 1981 shows growing up because, for one thing, there was no access
right,
to it.
Right, that's true.
I think that's the biggest access
right.
the last few years has just grown so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives you the opportunity to do things like this.
Right, yeah.
How many matches total are nominated?
I could pull that up really quickly. It is full poll.
Oh, there's our expense tracking.
Google yes, Docs. All on Google Docs. let's see, and like Ooh. It goes as far back as 1961 is the first match
wow.
on this poll.
Okay.
And it goes, there are 1373, and that goes, but this is split, so it's half of that, I guess.
What?
Like there's a line.
Oh, you're counting the number of rows.
Can yes.
Can you do equal sign? Here, I can teach you a formula.
Okay.
There's a way to, well, in Excel, there's a way to count unique first.
Oh, this is Google Sheets.
I know, but the functionality is similar. I'll play with it later.
Okay, yeah. So for right now, and this ends at WrestleMania 35. Okay. And obviously, there have been matches that have been added since then. So let's say about 700 matches, probably.
Okay.
So about 700, and the ranking, you rank your top 100.
Okay.
So what we decided to do was look at, this time, for our first rodeo, we went for 5 tag team matches.
Yep.
Going from 1990 to 2015. No, 16 was the latest. So, do you want to do this in the order we watched them, or chronologically?
Oh, chronologically.
Okay.
Would be fun. And then, probably should preface this with saying that my commentary is not going to be as in-depth as your commentary.
Right, yeah. Well, it's two different views. It's
right.
It's the novice and the veteran.
Novice
and the veteran. So the first match we watched chronologically was from WrestleMania 6.
Mm-hmm.
Andre the Giant and Haku. Do you remember their name?
Oh, I wrote it down.
Oh.
Otherwise, I would not have. They were the Colossal Connection.
Yes, but Mean Gene in the interview beforehand calls them the Colostomies
That's
Connection.
Right. That's right.
Which the brain
it's a
takes
solid pun.
The brain takes umbrage at. And they were taking on, they were defending the tag titles against
Demolition.
Yes. So at the time, Demolition had been around since like 1987.
I was going to ask if those were like long-standing pairs.
Or... Yeah, and they were like the team. They had basically held the titles from 1988. Through, well, they lost them in August or July of 89, but then won them back in November of 89 to the Brainbusters. And then they lost them in December of 89 to
the Brainbusters?
Yes. That was.
Is it all alliterative names that they had?
A lot of them were.
That's
yeah.
true. That's true.
Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard.
That's not alliterative.
No, well, that was their actual. Arn Anderson's alliterative.
It is, yeah.
So,
did he have an accounting firm?
I don't think he did. He's doing his own podcast nowadays, so he probably didn't have that much money.
Arthur Anderson?
Yes,
okay.
I'm aware. So, yeah, so Demolition had basically been the top team for 2 years.
Okay.
And this was, Haku and Andre the Giant had just teamed up. I think it was like one of their first matches they beat them.
Yeah, Andre the Giant, did he do a lot of tag matches, or what was his?
Especially at this time, he was kind of fading into that, because this is actually his last match.
Ever?
In WWE.
Oh.
Okay. He did a couple overseas things afterwards, but this was his last match. And you could kind of tell he's not even in the match legally
he's
at
really
any
not.
Point.
Yeah.
He just gets some clubs in from the apron, and then he does the spot at the end where he gets kicked into the ropes.
Right.
But that's it for him. So this was the end of his row, and I think really they just kind of put him in a tag team so he could still have a point to go.
Right. Because
before this, his last run of matches was losing to the Ultimate Warrior in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty uneven
Yeah,
matchup.
So he was just kind of riding out the terms, and I think by this point he had finally reached the end. And really, he was in his navy blue attire here, and that's kind of the sign. If you're just...
Wait, really?
If you're watching any...
Any
random Andre match,
oh,
and you see
him
wearing the navy blue...
I thought you meant like anybody wearing...
No, just with Andre specifically. If you see that he's wearing the navy blue, you know it's towards the end. He's going to have the really shaggy sideburns, and he's not going to be moving around a lot.
Okay.
But, so, and this is a match that is not a technical masterpiece.
Right.
It's not as athletic as any of the other matches we'll look at.
For sure. This is the last one we watched, and it was, you know, definitely a different pace.
Right.
A lot slower. And they were all just bigger guys. And
right,
there was a lot of moves off the ropes.
No. Yeah, I think Haku hits a headbutt from the second rope, and that's about the high spot.
Yep. You almost got headbutted. You got headbutted a couple times tonight by our
headbutted.
2-year-old.
Yep, he's learning the headbutts. Luckily, he's not Samoan. I would be killed otherwise.
Yeah.
But getting back to the match, so I put it on here just because it is a sentimental favorite for me.
Okay.
I make no bones about it being a great tag match, but I think...
Well, what's sentimental about it to you?
Well, WrestleMania 6 was the first WrestleMania I bought.
Okay.
Like, it was one that I rented a lot from Video Village, and then...
What's Video Village?
A video store that wasn't Blockbuster.
Okay, yeah.
And one summer they had a sidewalk sale, and that, along with Survivor Series 1988 and Survivor Series 1990, were all on sale for $6 each.
Whoa.
And I literally, it was at 87th and Pulaski, about five blocks from my house. I rode my bike back home, ripped open my piggy bank, literally went at it with a knife.
Wow.
Scraped it open and ran back to the store.
Aww,
with
I didn't know that.
$20 and bought the tapes and the WrestleMania 6 tape and 1990 Survivor Series tape eventually were lost to a VCR.
I was going to ask
watched
if your
so many times.
Still had them.
No, they are gone. They are in the big videotape store in the sky.
The big Blockbuster in the sky.
just like Blockbuster itself is in the big Blockbuster in the sky. So, yeah, so it was always, and this is the second match on the card of that WrestleMania. So it's kind of like one of those shows that there's probably three good matches, maybe. That's being generous to what you call good matches.
And especially for you to say that.
Yeah, but just that will always hold a nice part,
special
nice
place in your heart.
And then also... It's the last show that Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura do commentary for.
Hmm.
So that's always kind of a special thing also. And then I've always loved the post-match angle where Demolition rides out on the little carts.
Right.
And then Andre...
The
little forklift.
Scissor lift, yeah.
Yes. And then, of course, Bobby the Brain Heenan mistakenly slaps Andre the Giant. So then Andre the Giant beats him and Haku up. And then leaves in his little scissor lift to the cheering of the crowd.
Right.
Which is a great
moment. That was a good
moment. Yeah. And then...
That was my favorite part of the match, to be honest.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And really, that was... He stayed around for... Stuck away for most of the year after that. And then he'd come back, like, in early 91, really just kind of to be addicted by Bobby the Brain Heenan, which...
It's a good foil.
That's what everyone always wanted people to be, so... It was great. There was one segment on Primetime Wrestling where he made Bobby the Brain Heenan jump around in a kiddie pool of grapes to make wine.
Nice.
And other
antics.
Other antics that he would do. So, anything else for this match?
I didn't really have a lot of notes on this one. Just because it was short.
Right.
I said good, short, not as agile.
Yes. Yeah.
As the newer wrestlers.
You know, I would say
matches.
That with the late 80s, early 90s matches, there's a lot of them that are slow and plodding. And I think this was at least quick.
That's true.
It wasn't...
But we've watched other matches from that era where there was a lot more fit, quicker pace.
Right, but you got to remember, we're watching the best matches
that's true.
Of that era. Yeah. We're not watching, like, this will mean nothing to you, but Hercules versus Dino Bravo, which would go for 20 minutes, and there'd be, like, a 10-minute chin lock in the middle where nothing is happening.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too compelling.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Most of these matches we'll watch.
Right, like the best of the best.
Right, we'll be on the higher end. So, yeah, this might be one of the least athletic matches we watch, but...
In relative terms.
Relative terms, it's still pretty good.
Okay.
So, yeah, so for me, I'll give my rankings as we go. This will be in the 90 to 100 range for me.
Oh, okay.
That's where I'm going to put, like, all the nostalgia. Guilty pleasure, sentimental value matches, where they're probably not on the list, but for my list, they're going to be on there.
Okay.
All right, so then next...
Well, sorry, so once it goes onto your list, is it like a March Madness bracket for the top 700?
No, it's going to... Or is it, like, number of everyone votes? It's descending...
Gotcha.
Number one match gets 100.
Gotcha.
Down, and then they tabulate. Everything and it's rolled out over time to build up the suspense.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. I'm not going to do my top 100 because that's insane. But at the end, we can go over of the five we watched.
Right. Yeah. I think that'd be good to kind of compare them. Mm-hmm. All right. Next, we go to there's a few different dates here because it was taped and then when it actually aired.
We'll just pick one and be consistent throughout the podcast of which date you want to use.
So it was taped on September 28th, 1994 at the Westchester County Civic Center.
In Westchester, Pennsylvania?
No, White Plains, New York.
Oh.
Westchester County.
Westchester. Yeah, gotcha. Yes. Okay.
Yes. So this was on Action Zone, which was a brand new show at the time. I think it was the second episode, their main event to try and hook people. It's also on Slamfest 95, Shawn Michaels' Hits from the Heartbreak Kid. That's what we watched it off of.
It sounds like it was a
Coliseum video tape. Oh, yeah. So that's how it's on the network because they don't have Action Zone.
Really?
On the network. It was kind of like, it was one of those shows where the first like 5 weeks they cared about it and then it just became like a review show. Hmm. So it wouldn't be that good really to put up unless they did the first few episodes. And then it's also on The Click Rules, a newer DVD.
Okay.
So we'll talk about The Click here. So,
like, what type of click? Like a click? Like a C-L-I-Q-U-E click?
K-L-I-Q.
What?
Yeah. So the match is the tag champs at the time, Shawn Michaels and Diesel, defeated the 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon, who was the Intercontinental Champion. So now, Shawn Michaels, you know.
Yes.
Diesel, you know as Kevin Nash.
I know him as the guy from Magic Mike.
Right, exactly. And 1-2-3 Kid, we actually watched a match for him in when we were doing some bit earlier work on this project.
Yes.
And Razor Ramon, any knowledge?
He's kind of porny, right?
Yeah, kind of, a little. Yeah, he kind of has that vibe.
Yeah, that's all I really think about with him. What are you getting at?
So all four of those guys were a backstage like.
I think I'm confusing Rick Rude and Razor Ramon.
Yeah, those
Rick,
would.
Rick Rude's the really porny one.
Yes, he's very porny. Yes.
Okay, you're right.
Razor Ramon had the slick back.
Yeah, I can. Black hair. I remember what he looks like, but he's obviously not that memorable.
Right. So
to me, anyways.
He's really from Florida, but he always played the part of a Cuban here because Vince McMahon had no idea what the movie Scarface was. And Scott Hall, the Razor Ramon's the real guy.
His Christian name isn't Razor Ramon.
He just went in there and started doing like a Scarface imitation, and Vince McMahon thought that was great.
Okay.
And thought he was Cuban.
Razor Ramon or yes. Scarface or both?
Both, I think. Okay. So it's kind of vaguely cocaine-ish with the razor.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a
slow. I think it's a stretch, but it's also because, like, when he first came in, he'd always talk about how the razor's going to cut you up.
But that's also, like, literally what a razor
is. Right. So it kind of had a double meaning. And Yeah. So, but in real life, Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Diesel, the 1-2-3 Kid, and Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, were like best friends in the back.
Oh.
And they were called the Click. That was what people called them. Their name.
A part of the kayfabe, or like really they were friends?
No, like they were really friends, and people backstage would be like, "Oh, that's the Click."
But they called them the K-L-I-Q. Click.
Yes.
Why?
I'm not sure why. Well, eventually, Shawn Michaels fans were called that, the Click, and that's how it was spelled. So I think just when they released stuff since then, they have that trademarked probably, so that's just how they go with it. And then a couple months after this, a new guy would join, a newcomer to the WWF called Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Oh, I've heard of him.
I don't know what happened to him, but needless to say, Shawn Michaels has a job with the WWE. Diesel and Razor Ramon come and go as they please, and Sean Waltman, 1-2-3 Kid, usually has a job.
Really?
If he wants it, yeah. So it might have something to do with their Click ally running the show nowadays.
I did just Google the Click, and the first thing that came up was the Click was a backstage group in the World Wrestling Federation during the mid-1990s.
Yeah.
Composed of Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels, Paul Levesque. Is that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's French. It has a lot of unnecessary letters. Right. And Sean Waltman.
Okay. They don't, yep. That's it. They don't add any ancillary members like Luis Piccoli or
you can go PJ Polacco. You can go edit the Wikipedia page after we're done if you really want to get a complete list. Anyways.
So, and they kind of had this thing where they wrestled each other a lot. Like Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon wrestled a lot. Diesel, for like all of the summer of 94, Shawn Michaels didn't wrestle. He was just Diesel's like manager. And that really helped Diesel get a lot better as a wrestler because he had someone telling him what to do. And
well, yeah, anything is going to be easier when you have someone telling you what to do. When
someone like Shawn Michaels, who is one of the best wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, they kind of just have this match. And this one goes 22 minutes, which is for nowadays on TV, like usually Raw's biggest match will go about 20 minutes. But for a show in 1994, and not even Raw, but for it to be on a Sunday morning show was like unheard of for 22 minutes. So it's probably, I would guess it's the longest TV match of that year.
Really?
Not counting pay-per-view matches.
Oh, I'm sure there's a way you could.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking.
But yeah, and it moved pretty well.
Yeah.
From what I remember. I just remember Shawn Michaels' mullet was like peak.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I just couldn't take my eyes off of it.
And one of the things that was kind of unusual about it was it kind of didn't follow the normal formula for a tag match where it's good guys come in, get the advantage right away.
Mm-hmm.
The heels cheat, get the advantage.
That's right.
And work them over. Because in this, they did that for the first like 10 minutes because mm-hmm. it's like a standard match. And then Shawn Michaels hits Sweet Chin Music on Diesel,
right.
And Diesel's out for like the last 8 minutes or so of the match. And Shawn Michaels, even though he's the heel, he actually fights off Razor and the Kid for the last 8 minutes until Diesel recovers. And
yeah,
I think he just kicks 1-2-3 Kid in the face and that's it.
Right. I think you're right. I think that is how it ends. I feel like a couple of these that we watched this week just kind of devolved into chaos.
Yeah, well,
after
that's
a certain point.
That's usually how tag matches end up going.
Yeah, the trajectory.
You work until the end when everyone gets in. And
right, and then one person gets knocked out.
Right. And also, this was the second time in a big match Shawn Michaels kicked Diesel accidentally.
Quote, unquote, accidentally.
Yes, because he did it at SummerSlam about a month, well, 2 months prior after this aired, went against Razor Ramon. And that's when Diesel lost the Intercontinental title to Razor Ramon.
They were just keeping it all in the Click.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing that, like, people, other wrestlers would be upset
would
because
they'd be jealous that they weren't in the Click?
Yes. Oh. Jealous. Well, not only that they weren't in the Click, but they claimed that they'd only work hard against the Click members. And to be fair, in 1994, there were these four guys. There was Bret Hart and Owen Hart. And then you could maybe say Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I mean, Yokozuna was 500 pounds, so he wasn't like moving around that well, but he was those are probably like the top wrestlers. And after that, there's a steep
drop off.
So yeah, Razor and Shawn Michaels were only having good matches with each other, but
there was only other options.
I mean, yeah, it was kind of like there's no one else to have good matches with. So it's kind of like, yeah, they're going to have good matches with each other, but who else are they going to have good matches with?
Yeah, I thought it was good. Yeah, I wrote action packed, not a lot of downtime or drama. They pretty much kept a good pace.
Yeah.
So why did this go in the top 700, do you think?
I think it's just always a match, especially like from the early 90s, a match this good will stand out.
Okay. Had you seen this one before?
Yes. I had seen it. I had the Slamfest 95 tape for a while on DVD.
Oh, wow.
So
DVD.
Well, I converted it to DVD.
Okay.
Because that's what got rid of most of my VHS tapes. I converted them to DVD and then sold them online.
On eBay. Remember you doing a fair amount of that earlier in our relationship.
So, yeah. So I kind of always remember this. And that's one that even when I was 9, it stuck out as like, this is different than what they're usually doing.
Right.
And I think that still it holds up even now.
I thought it did too. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it held up a lot better, I think, than the, well, kind of not shot for shot, what, move for move, is that the way to phrase it? Than the 1991 that we watched.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. So I had this, I don't have the position for it yet, but I have it. I'm kind of doing out of 10.
That's a good idea to do ranges.
Yeah, so I have that at 9.5. So like 10 is the top of the top.
Oh.
So I have it at 9.5. So it'll probably be like top 25, top 30.
Okay, yeah, because your first match you said between 100 and 90. So
right,
you
kind of flipped it. Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah. 190, like that'll be its ranking.
Got it.
But no, I'm saying like 9.5 is what I gave this.
Okay.
And then it kind of, we'll see after I rank more matches what that means exactly.
Right.
All right. So moving on from that, anything else on that match that you'd like to?
Just the mullet.
Yeah. It was, I mean, really.
Insane.
Shawn Michaels had it. Diesel had it. Razor Ramon didn't really have it. He just had long hair, kind of. 1-2-3 Kid, a little, but.
Not really.
He had it more when he first came in. It was.
The 1-2-3 Kid, he's a little bit like a blind spot to me. Like, I have never heard of him. And I've been tangentially watching wrestling with you for about 9 years. I feel like I've never seen him.
Yeah. DX, X-Pac?
Nah.
Yeah. All right. So our next match is No Mercy 1999
in. Oh, I didn't write it down. Cleveland?
Yes.
Oh, I did know that.
Cleveland, like the Gundarena.
Gundarena.
Yep.
Not the gun, Dorina. Like the when gun. It first opened up, I thought Arena. It was the gun, space,
D. Dorina.
Like D apostrophe.
Dorina.
Dorina, yeah. Nice. It was not.
No. That would have been better. It's better than the Quick and Loans.
I was about like 8, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll allow it. So this was the TIT tournament final.
Oh, gosh. This commentary is so annoying.
So
I wish if we would watch this, like at the commentary muted, I would have enjoyed it a lot more.
So it was the Terry Invitational Tournament Finals, a ladder match between Edge and Christian versus Matt and Jeff Hardy, who they called the New Brood because they had Gangrel the Vampire with them. You remember that at the very beginning?
I don't remember.
The guy in the white shirt. He came out.
He was supposed to be a vampire?
Yes, he was a vampire. And actually,
he didn't have fangs?
Well, he kind of did. I mean, he didn't really wrestle, so they didn't zoom in on him, but he kind of had, like, fake fangs. Huh. And also, so, in 1998, they came up with this storyline. Edge was, like, a loner from the crowd. Okay. So that's how he kind of came in. He had, like, all these vignettes where he was, like, a tortured soul on the streets. Okay. He came in, and right away, he started feuding with Gangrel the Vampire.
Okay, sure.
Then, after a few weeks of that, Gangrel the Vampire showed up with a guy wearing a white like tunic shirt like him, a white pirate shirt almost.
A puffy shirt?
A puffy shirt with that looked exactly like Edge.
Oh.
And it was Christian. Edge's quote-unquote brother.
That's right. That's right. And but then, the vampire created his brother?
No, the vampire had somehow turned his brother, I guess.
Oh.
And then Edge...
Like Twilight vampires?
Well, they weren't very sparkly.
But that's how they turn people into vampires.
I guess. It was never really quite well explained. This was in the heyday of Vince Russo.
Oh, okay.
I talked about before. Yeah. Who would have... The good thing about him, everyone had a story. So everyone had some motivation for doing something. The problem is some of the motivations were horrible. And for some reason, Edge ends up teaming with his brother, Christian, and the vampire Gangrel.
Does Edge get turned into a vampire?
Well, they're never really clear on that again.
Okay.
But eventually, so they're a team for a while called the Brood, all three of them. And then... The summer of 99, Edge and Gangrel get in a fight and break up. And then Christian decides to stay with Edge. And then the Hardy Boys, who had just started kind of becoming a thing. Like, for years, they were just jobbers.
Okay.
Like, there's matches of, like, a 16-year-old Jeff Hardy just getting killed by Razor Ramon.
16-year-old?
Yeah. Well, they lied about their age.
Well, yeah.
But eventually, they got a shot to become a thing. They became a thing, and then Gangrel becomes their manager.
God. Did Gangrel ever wrestle, or did he just manage? He wrestled,
but he was better suited as a manager. And even he wasn't a great manager, but that tells you how good of a wrestler he was, I think.
Right.
So, here, let me...
Are there any Gangrel matches on the list?
he might be in a rumble that just by... So here's a better look at Gangrel. So as you can see,
he does have fangs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah.
And black nail polish, and
he did do a guest coaching job at the Performance Center at some point.
Yeah, he looks like he's cleaned up a lot.
Yeah. Well, there's not much, he's not a vampire anymore.
That's good. He turned back into a human.
Yes.
Okay.
So
does Vince Russo have an explanation for that?
No, he's got a podcast that's really bad and.
Gangrel or Vince Russo?
Vince Russo. So there's a chance that he's talked about Gangrel, but I haven't gotten into it. So, yes. And, of course, the thing that it's for $100,000 that's hanging on the top of the ladder. But also, Jerry Lawler is much more interested in the fact that it's also for Terry's services. And I think services mean her great strategizing lessons for before matches.
Right.
That's why he was so excited.
That's exactly why.
Yes, including the interview before the match where she's like, climbing up the ladder and he's just looking at her.
Yeah, blatantly.
Yes.
Staring up her skirt.
Yes.
And she's wearing no underwear.
No underwear.
And no shirt.
No shirt. She's got like a fur coat on that.
She's got a fur coat that's like barely covering her boobs.
I mean, it doesn't even cover her boobs. It's just covering her nipples.
Right. And I assume there's a lot of double-sided tape on something like
that. Yeah, probably. Or just, I know sometimes they would just use pasties over the nipples. So in case something did pop up, you weren't too sure about it.
Right. It's like the Janet Jackson sparkle boob on the Super Bowl.
Yes. Now,
but yeah, he was driving me nuts.
Service talk aside, though, what did you think of the match overall?
Like I said, yeah, if he wasn't taught, yeah. So yeah, him aside, I thought it was good. I said it was really quiet at first.
Yes.
It kind of took the crowd a little bit to buy into it.
I think so. Yeah.
And that was the first ladder match,
First tag team ladder.
Tag team ladder match.
Because before this, it was two Shawn Michaels versus Razor matches. And then The Rock vs. Triple H. And that was like a year before. And really, like, Shawn Michaels would do like a dive from the top. But it was a totally different type of match.
Yes. Yeah, I said they definitely used the ladders as much as possible. I think it was pretty inventive, the couple of things they did with the seesaw.
The seesaw and
it got a little
Jeff Hardy like springboard over the one in the corner.
I mean, to me it was almost a little gratuitous though.
Yes, there are some points.
I mean, I understand, like, you have ladders, you want to use them, that's the whole point.
Right.
It seemed at certain points it was like there really was no actual wrestling. It was just beating the crap out of each other.
Right. And did the slow climbing annoy you at all?
Not really. I thought I kind of expected.
Yeah.
That kind of comes, once again, that's part of the ladder match.
Right, yeah. No, yeah, it's true. Also in this match, I want to make note, it's our first tally for the pink and hot green
the windbreaker
couple that I mean, from, I think the first time I saw him was SummerSlam 96, and that's also in the Gund Arena. Okay. I think it was one of the first events.
Oh.
And then all the way through, I know I saw them at WrestleMania in 2007 there in Detroit.
Right.
So any kind of Midwest Rust Belt city major show they are at. So.
Do you know anything about them?
No, Bruce Pritchard once mentioned them in a podcast of his. They had to know someone.
Right, because it's be not on like, the floor.
Yeah, it's not shows. Like even if you were rich, you could get those tickets every show, always on the hard camera side, always
that's
facing.
True, right.
Yeah, so I'm not sure who they are. Maybe they're listening to this.
Maybe.
Hot Pink Guy, if you want to be a guest on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Drop us a line.
We should be, that'd be a good Halloween costume for us when if we ever want to do yes. a couple's costume.
Be very, very niche, but.
Right, I think if there was a crowd to appreciate it.
Yes.
What would Harry be then? Harry's our son.
Yes. Well, there's plenty of other fans he could choose from.
He could be the kid in the yellow raincoat.
Yeah, kid in the yellow raincoat. There's also 96, 97, there's always this fan that had like a massive bowl cut. And he would always be making this face at the crowd. Let me, I can't remember now. A few months ago on Twitter, there was like a big campaign to try and find him. And one person supposedly said that he was him.
Nah, that's
I don't know if that was ever proven or not, but yeah. Maybe he could be Angry Bowl Cut Kid.
I'm just going to Google Bowl Cut Wrestling Fan. Oh, yeah. Oh. I don't know. According to Reddit, he's been found.
Yeah, here's.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's.
Yep. That's a look.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, podcasts aren't a visual medium, but I assume most of the people.
Most people will know who Angry Bowl Cut is.
Exactly,
yes.
Who you're talking about.
Yes. All right. Anything else on this match? Oh, well, actually, I should point out that, like you said, at the beginning it was quiet because these guys, Edge and Christian, have been around for about a year. The Hardys, really, since about February is when they kind of like became full-time, but they were still, all four of them were kind of, this was meant to build both teams up.
That's what I was going to ask, why did they give the first ladder tag match to the newbies,
it's,
or newer
and that,
people?
Like, the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn were the tag champs. They had a match earlier or later on the show, but I think they just kind of knew that these four guys, for one, they make do crazy stunts and go all out for it.
Which, did they practice?
Probably not.
I think some of those moves were elaborate enough with the ladders.
Yeah, but I think with ladders, you didn't really practice because you kind of did it one shot because if you hurt yourself.
Good point.
You wouldn't be practicing it the day of. Maybe, I think, not for this, but like later times when they do even more crazy stunts, they might have had like a crash pad down there earlier in the day. But I think for this, it's pretty much just go and try your best. Because if it's live,
I give them a lot of credit.
If it's live, you can't mess up. It's kind of always the moniker.
Yeah.
And I mean, at the end, they both got a big ovation.
Yeah.
And then especially the next night on Raw, they both, all four came out and they didn't even say anything. And the crowd just gave them like a 3-minute standing ovation.
Yeah, I actually have a lot more respect for them now that I know they just improved a match.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, so it was, I'd say this is really, and then after this, that year's WrestleMania, they'd have another ladder match, and this time the Dudleys were added.
The Dudleys.
Yeah, the Bubba Ray and D-Von, they're half-brothers from Dudleyville. Big Daddy Dudley.
I can kind of.
Big Daddy
Dudley
sired a whole crew of Dudley boys.
Uh-huh.
So they get added, and then from there they have four, they call them TLC matches, tables, ladders, and chairs.
I knew that.
Yes. That stuck around to this day. But so that was kind of like, this is the first in that series.
So who came up with the concept?
The ladder match. Well, the ladder match originally, going way back, was in Stampede Wrestling in Canada. Bret Hart's dad, Stu Hart, had like the idea of it, and they had a few ladder matches there.
And how, what year was that?
It was like late 70s, yeah. early 80s. Wow. And then in the 90s, Vince McMahon was thinking of something to do with Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. And the first actual ladder match in the WWF was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels.
Oh, okay.
But it was on a Coliseum video. So, again, not a lot of people saw it. And then...
And not eligible for this contest.
No, this would be... It's on a video. So it is... Gotcha. Nowadays, it's known. But back then, it wasn't. And then at WrestleMania 10, it was Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon. And this was the first one shown on pay-per-view. And that's one of the things that kind of led to the Shawn Michaels Bret Hart rivalry. Was
gotcha.
Shawn Michaels became famous for the ladder match, even though it was Bret Hart's idea.
Yeah.
And they,
wah,
yes,
wah.
Exactly. That's how a lot of people think of Bret Hart.
Is he really that whiny?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
I mean, one of the best wrestlers ever, but for one thing, I think he kind of thinks it's real still.
Does he kind of like Screech a little bit?
A little bit.
He's the Screech of the Click. Or he wasn't in the Click.
No, he was outside of the Click looking in. So.
Oh, another reason.
And that was, he always claimed that everyone else liked him more than the Click. So, I mean, he's not exactly a biased group there. All right. But anything else for the ladder match?
Nope. Like I said, the match itself was good, and I honestly do look at it in a different light that they didn't really practice, or not like necessarily practice, but at least kind of come up with some setups.
Right. I mean,
like
they might have, I'm sure earlier in the day they had a ladder out and maybe were sitting in the ring and thinking about what they, could do.
Right.
But not really running through it.
Yeah.
So for my rating for it, the only thing is it's probably going to be around in the 50 to 60 range.
Oh, we're going back to the rankings, yes. Not the numbers? Okay.
Yes. Because the only thing that hurts it are all the matches that come after it are better.
In terms of ladder
matches? So, I mean, it's kind of like, not really damning to this match. It's just kind of like...
Yeah, with time. It's harder for the older ones probably to...
Right.
Behind, to hold up. Stand the test of time.
Yeah, I agree.
So...
So next we take a big jump.
Yep, moving forward in time.
Yep, to February 25th, 2014, the Elimination Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Or as it's known in Germany, No Escape.
Oh.
Because you can't call something the Elimination Chamber in Germany.
That's...
And this is actually the last pay-per-view before the WWE Network came out.
Really?
Yes.
They really come out in 2014. Well, yep. I guess you always had your hard drive. So even after we started living together, there was a copious amount of wrestling.
Yes.
But yeah, I remember one time I came home from work and you were watching like Ohio Valley Wrestling. Just like, stop.
Yes.
We need to go out.
Yes. So, and the match we looked at was The Shield of Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns against the Wyatt family of Bray Wyatt, Luke Harper, and Eric Rowan.
Yep.
And it's a 6-man tag that goes for 22 minutes.
That was a long 22 minutes.
Yes. And it was, before the match even started, though, the whole crowd was chanting, "This is awesome."
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, people were.
Yes, because I think, for one thing, really, the Shield ends up kind of being the good guys in the match.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But they were heels going into it. So both groups were really heels. It was just kind of the Wyatts were worse.
Okay.
Because
as much as I don't remember or paid attention when you watched wrestling, I do remember when The Shield debuted.
Yes, that was Survivor Series 2012.
Well, I didn't remember that part, but I remember seeing them on the
screen. Yeah, it was just over a year.
As The Shield. Wait, no. Oh, just over a year, yeah, because November to January. Got it.
To February.
Well, close enough.
Yes. But yeah, so, and they had kind of, for the Wyatts showed up in like June of 2013.
Yep.
So they had always been, and they kind of, a few times they teamed up with each other, but they always were kind of kept apart. And then.
Was that intentional, you think?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it was all building to this. And then in the build up for the video package, they showed that the Shield was having a 6-man tag match.
Against
John Cena, Daniel Bryan, and Sheamus. And the Wyatts had just started feuding with John Cena, which would lead to the WrestleMania match.
Right.
And so they show up and beat up John Cena, leading to the Shield getting disqualified. So then the Shield was pissed off at them.
Why did the Shield get disqualified for the Wyatts interrupting their match?
Because they attacked John Cena. So
the Wyatts?
Yeah. So if they're attacking John Cena, the ref's going to call disqualification and just DQ the Shield because their opponents are getting beaten up.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. That was the WrestleMania you went to for your bachelor party.
Yep. WrestleMania 30, probably the most into it I've been.
Really?
I would say so, yeah.
Like in your whole life or just like the specific event?
Just the event and leading up to it.
Yeah.
And just that whole weekend was a thing with random wrestlers just walking up and down Bourbon Street. Yeah, the one time we saw a midget smoking in Bourbon Street that we thought was Hornswoggle.
Poor guy.
It was not. I think at the exact moment Hornswoggle was on stage at the Hall of Fame ceremony. So, and that poor guy had quite a few people walking up to him asking if he was Hornswoggle. And he was just a lonely little person on Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
happens to everyone, though, I'm sure.
Well, not everybody.
Not everyone.
But, the match, I'm trying to think. Yeah, a lot of build-up. It was a long 22 minutes.
Yes.
I remember seeing this when we were watching. It was just like Seth Rollins do all the fighting. You know, Roman Reigns look like, scowl the whole time on the sideline, pace back and forth. And then Dean Ambrose just like
run around and be like,
twitchy and then jump out. So, that being said, though, I thought Seth Rollins did a good job. He did a lot of aerial moves, a lot of 360 move at the beginning.
Yeah, I think this was really like...
It was definitely all... I think any time if I looked away to take notes and looked back up, it was always Seth Rollins and Luke Harper.
They were definitely the majority two of the most. Fighting. And even Luke Harper did a crazy dive to the outside, which, I mean, Seth Rollins doing it is one thing, but Luke Harper, who's 6'8 and 300 pounds...
He's a big guy.
Is another thing. And then, the thing for the whole year up to this was always the Shield had the numbers advantage. Like, because they'd usually...
three on three.
Well, numbers. Yeah, but and usually, they'd attack a guy 3-on-1 or 3-on-2. Oh. So then that kind of builds into the end of the match where Dean Ambrose gets taken out.
Gotcha.
They put Seth Rollins through the table. And then Roman Reigns tries to fight him off. It seems like he has him. He goes for a spear on Roman or on Bray Wyatt. He moves, and then he hits his finisher and pins him. And
is that when Dean Ambrose ran out?
Yeah, he goes into the crowd with Bray Wyatt.
That's right. But Bray Wyatt comes back, and Dean Ambrose really just doesn't.
Right,
that's
kind
of
disappears
part of the part
into
where
the
it gets
ether.
A little chaotic.
Right. Yeah, it's totally all six guys at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have done it, but it was kind of like. This is the the dominance of them, and after that they feud with Evolution, which was Triple H's team of him, Batista, and Randy Orton, and that brought Blue-tista when he's in all blue.
Oh yeah.
And Bautista.
Bautista, yeah.
And then eventually, right after that feud, though, when Batista leaves to become Drax and Guardians of the Galaxy, that's when Seth Rollins turns on the Shield and becomes the heel of the company, really.
And Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, did they ever tag up anymore or no? Anymore?
A little bit. They kind of had a Shield reunion in 2017, and then they did it a little bit last year, but then Roman Reigns hit his leukemia.
Right, I know there's been a lot
of that broke it up, and then they did it again right before WrestleMania this year when Roman Reigns came back.
But I saw a commercial.
But then Dean Ambrose was leaving.
Yeah, Dean Ambrose is on the
other AEW.
One,
yeah.
AEW.
Yeah, but the last 2 months that he was around, they did another quick Shield reunion.
So how does Place to Be Nation feel about AEW? Is that...
It's kind of a split decision.
Oh.
People like it. Some people...
Is it going to be actively discussed? Is it part of the...
Yeah, there's a podcast down there that goes over the new show once it's over, and people talk about it in there. There are shows also.
So I guess if you're a fan, you're a fan no matter
right,
what.
Right, yeah. I mean, there are some people that are, I'm a WWE fan, that's all. There's some people that are, I'll watch anything that's not WWE.
Oh.
And then there's people that are just, I'll watch whatever.
I'm guessing you're in the third camp?
I'm in the third camp.
Yeah.
I'll, yeah. because I want to put me in the first camp of WWE or nothing.
Right.
But also, there's just so much nowadays that, like, it's hard.
Really? Besides AEW and WWE?
Yes, there's
a lot of, smaller?
Smaller independents, but companies. They're easier to, like, get now. Like,
well, like we were saying before with Access.
Yeah, Access, and, like, there's, like, different apps you could get where there's New Japan is the Japanese company, and they've had a few shows in America, and they have an app that's kind of like the WWE Network. The only problem is it's still mostly in Japanese, so it's not translating too well in the U.S.
Maybe very niche audience.
Maybe if they made it a little interface with a little more English, I'd do a free trial at least, but...
Oh, I think we have enough monthly apps and subscriptions. True. We don't need to add New Japan wrestling.
So, going on to our last show, last match, was NXT TakeOver Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the event in 2016.
Yep.
November. And it is 2 out of 3 falls for the tag titles. The Revival, Dawson and Wilder defending against
DIY,
Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa.
Yep.
So
I'm familiar because we saw them.
Yes, we actually saw them at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, which was your first show.
Mm-hmm.
First ever wrestling show.
Yeah, that was a fun weekend.
Yes, it was. We
did the Seinfeld reality tour.
Yeah, the Seinfeld reality tour, NXT Brooklyn, and then SummerSlam the next day.
That's right. Yeah.
And NXT was a nice 2.5 hours.
Yeah, NXT was a lot more better experience for me than SummerSlam.
Yeah, SummerSlam was long. Long.
We had had quite a few beverages.
Yes, beforehand. Yeah, that was when we first met the Place to Be Nation members at the German Beer Hall, a couple of blocks from the Barclays Center. So this was the rematch, though.
Right.
So what happened at the match in Brooklyn, if you remember?
Oh, geez. So it was down to the end, and then they did the backbreaker, like this move where you put your hands over your face. I know people can't see me. But DIY lost.
Right.
And we all thought, well, not really me because I didn't know what was going on, but everyone thought that Ciampa was going to turn on Gargano at the end of the match. And everyone was chanting, don't turn, don't
turn. And then he didn't.
He didn't.
Just hugged each other and walked off. And then because it was kind of playing off, well, they had a match earlier in the summer for the Cruiserweight title. It just happened to be in the tournament against each other.
Oh, DIY was against each other? The two members were against each other?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then also it was kind of just going off Ciampa's like independent like gimmick where he was called the Psycho Killer, where he'd like go after anyone and stuff. So it was kind of like, actually, I saw him at Bourbon Street a couple months before that show.
Really?
And he wrestled and...
Wait, at Bourbon Street, the one in
Marionette Park? In Marionette Park, Illinois, yes.
We were talking about
the real
Bourbon Street. So you saw him?
Yeah.
And at Bourbon Street?
Yes, in 2016.
In 2016?
Yes.
Really?
He came out to Psycho Killer.
Oh, I remember you telling me that.
Heads.
Yeah, good song.
Yes. So then they have a rematch in Toronto, and it was 2 out of 3 falls, and I'm pretty sure it was billed as if DIY didn't win the tag titles, it was their last shot.
They were done
as a team. So the stakes were kind of high. So
for wrestling.
Yes, for wrestling.
I really liked it. Yeah, a lot of action, a lot of drama. You know, some callbacks. I didn't do a good job of explaining it, but the moves, a lot of the same moves that were done
in
the SummerSlam match were kind of done in this match.
Because I think the actual end was in Brooklyn, they throw Ciampa into the ring post. And then they put like a ankle lock.
That's it.
A bridge.
Yeah.
It was like grabbing his face at the same time.
Right.
And that was a tap out there. And they did the same spot here.
That's
but
right. Except he got out of it.
Ciampa is able to break the hold.
I thought it was Gargano that was in the hold.
Yeah. Ciampa's able to come in.
I gotcha.
Break it up.
No, I thought that Gargano like crawled over to the ropes.
Yeah, he could have. Yeah.
You don't remember?
Well, there was a lot of submissions in the match.
That's true.
And there was a lot of...
We both could be right.
Yeah. They probably did it twice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's... So, the first fall happens real quick.
Because it was 2 out of 3.
Right. That's the Revival hit their move, and that does it. And then Gargano and Ciampa hit their double kick in the middle of the ring. to get the to even it up. And then later in the match, the Revival gets ready to do the double kick themselves, and that misses, and then
they kick each other.
They kicked each other, and then Gargano and Ciampa do the Revival's finisher to each other. And
that's right.
Gets a close two, and then they lock in their both of their submission moves, and the Revival even hold each other's hands at one time to try and stop the other from tapping, but then they both just tap out.
That's right. Yeah, that was one. That one was really good.
Yeah, that one I have. That'll probably be in my. That I have rated as a 10.
Oh, you just changed your ratings again.
Well, I rated it as a 10, and it'll probably be in my top 10 matches.
Okay, just talk about it in terms of your top 1 to 10.
Okay, well, I want to let you know that I think this is like a perfect
You think tag it's a match. Perfect match?
Pretty much.
Really?
As close as it can get, yeah.
Why is it, like, what's your criteria for a perfect match?
It's
Why
just because I've never seen a tag match that's better.
Oh, okay.
So, maybe not perfect, but the best I've
Relative,
seen.
Relative, yeah. Of all the tag matches.
Yeah, so that's probably going to be in my top 10. Because I think, like, if I'm saying 10 out of 10, there shouldn't be more than 15 matches there, I think.
Right.
Like, otherwise, it's kind of like, when do you...
Yeah, you're going to have to, like, print all these out on index cards.
Yeah,
and,
like, for a state of reference, I gave Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
I gave that 10.
Okay.
And their Hell in a Cell match,
yeah,
the first one, I gave that 9.9.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's like, so that Hell in the Cell is kind of like the best you can be without being 10, in my view.
Wow. All right. So
that's just to give you a little breakdown of.
And how often, when do you have to start voting for all these?
Or they open the poll, but you have until New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's got time to think about it and plan it.
Right. Rank where the other ones go.
So. Well, maybe I will submit my top 100.
Maybe. Then. Well, let's hear your top five
of these that we watched. Okay. I think my favorite was definitely the DIY Revival one. I think that's a pretty much an easy number one. After that, I don't know the ladder. Like I said, I have a lot more respect for the ladder match. I don't know if I'm going to put that. I'll put that second, actually. Okay. Yeah. And then third, the Wyatt's one was good. Maybe just because I wasn't, maybe I was just tired. Or I just like, that one was, oh wait, the ladder match has the terrible commentary. Without the commentary, my qualifier.
So mute.
The muted or just, version.
Or in like the early 2000s when they did DVD releases, they had lost a lawsuit to Jesse Ventura. So there'd be matches with just one commentator.
Really?
Where they'd edit out Jesse the Body Ventura's commentary. So maybe you need that for
Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, so just have Jim Ross yelling.
I'd be okay with that.
And just randomly saying, well, yeah, we know about our services, King.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Just shut your mouth. I think the Wyatts and the 1994 match are pretty close.
Yeah.
I'll put the Shawn Michaels one above the Wyatts because there's more. I guess that Wyatts one was just so slow.
Okay.
I think they were, I know it's for dramatic effect, but I don't really, I guess for me, I'm finding that I like the faster paced matches. Yeah, I don't necessarily need the drama and the lead up to it. And then I think just because it was short and it was sluggish, the Colossal connection and the Demolition.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's my fifth one.
It's definitely the lower of the five. So I'd have that lowest.
Yep.
Next, I think I'd said Hardy's Edge and Christian, just because I know they have a lot of better matches. Which,
and I feel like I might have to go back and watch these all again once I've seen them all, and I might feel differently.
That's true. And then next I would go the Click Shawn Michaels Diesel versus 1-2-3 Kid Razor Ramon match. And then I'd actually put Wyatt's Shield number 2.
Okay.
Just because I think at that time it was such a fresh matchup. And like that was the last pay-per-view before the network, like I said. And I gladly went to Jason's house and paid $30.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, we're watching
this. I was just about to ask, what did you do before the network for pay-per-views?
I mean, there was quite a few times we'd go to a bar that was showing at the Rocks up there.
Oh, yeah.
They had it. And So we went there a few times, and then WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, one of us would always get it. But this was a one where I think we got, because eventually with Rocks, you had to get there early, right, to like get a table. I think we might have driven there.
The one in Lakeview or Lincoln Park, Lincoln Square?
This was the one in Lakeview.
Okay, that one's kind of small.
Yeah. Or no, there was one in like Lincoln Park.
Oh, I never went to that one.
So they went, it was kind of big, but we got there and it was packed. Mm-hmm. So I think we just looked at each other and were like, let's just go to your house.
Right.
And order it. And that's what we did. So yeah, I think that match at that time, because they still did a lot of John Cena versus Randy Orton main events. And that at that time it was played out.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So this like was like a fresh match. This like was really said, yeah, six new guys. It wasn't the main event, but it was six new guys in a featured spot. And then, yeah, number one, like I said, DIY Revival, because it's pretty much
a perfect tag match.
Yes, match. Absolutely perfect.
Are there any Mr. Perfect matches in the list?
He's kind of a weird one. There are could be a couple, but he's a guy who kind of like Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man. Who else? Jake the Snake Roberts. Like, all these super memorable characters who just, they never had great matches. Well, they had good to great matches, but their best matches were usually, like, the Madison Square Garden matches, the Boston Garden matches, because they'd get to go 15, 20 minutes on there. Where, like, at WrestleMania, they might get 7 minutes.
Okay.
And back then, it was hard to have a great match. Well, even now, it's hard to have a great match in 7 minutes.
That's true.
Yeah.
They're more like bit players almost.
Yeah, they were the undercard, the mid-card guys. Gotcha. And the only guys who got the long matches were Hulk Hogan, who sometimes he couldn't do great in a long match.
No.
It didn't matter. All right. So anything else to add about these five matches?
No, I think you picked five good ones. I like the variety, how we watched ones from the different time periods and kind of like the first, you know, the first tag team ladder match.
Right.
So, no, I think it's been good. What are we watching next week?
So, our next one will be something that I'm not sure how you'll feel about, but they're all bloody brawls.
Yeah, I don't like the blood ones.
But so, I think most of them, there's one or two that you might not be too keen on, but I think the other ones have enough good action that you'll be able to see through the blood. And see,
it's so gross. Yeah. It's so unsanitary.
Well, some of them are. Some of them are a little bit cleaner.
Okay.
You can tell that there have been precautions taken. Maybe not the one from 1984, but
yeah,
we'll get to that one in time. But that one will make
you have to get like tetanus shots before.
Not then, probably. Okay. But this one, that one will make you feel good about being
I'm intrigued.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Well, I can't really say I'm looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to our discussion about it.
Will you continue to take this ring and continue this journey?
I do. Okay.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you later. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank
thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.